Hello, I'm Farah Ali, a PhD candidate from the University of Hull. First of all, I would like to thank Alice for her nice introduction. And I would like to add that my subject is not only about Pinter, but Jean Genet, who's a French playwright and whose works were based heavily on the use of myth and rituals in his theater. So my paper today is to explore the use of myth and rituals in the plays of Harold Pinter and Jean Genet, and especially in explaining the predicament of identity in the 20th century. So, it is believed that theater was born from the womb of myth, especially in ancient Greece. Serious studies carried out by outstanding anthropologists such as Jane Harrison, Gilbert Murray, and others clarified that myths were one of the main mediums through which people in different cultures expressed their lives, feelings, events such as birth, death, marriage, weddings, passion, weakness, love, hate, etc. In ancient Greece, Plato believed that myths contained some truth too. Myth was considered as main source of inspiration for many thinkers and artists. In terms of theater, Antonin Artaud always called for the use of new myths instead of relying on old ones to interpret modern man's life. Myths should become a dynamic center of the theater performance, he commented. Taking Artaud's suggestion further, the purpose of this paper is to bring to surface one of the most crushing dilemmas of the modern man in the 20th century, that is the predicament of identity. The concern of this issue grew bigger and bigger after the Second World War atrocities. Ever since, the dramatists went so far to bring us close to our true selves, which have been lost or blurred due to the psychological pressures ensued. Harold Pinter and Jean Genet addressed this predicament in their own particular way, by reclining to the old theatrical forms from which the first nucleus of theater emerged, that is myth and rituals. For anthropologists believe that rituals are the performative part of myth, and as I mentioned, that Genet used ritualistic scenes heavily in his plays to dwell on that predicament. So, the paper is going to focus on one play for Harold Pinter that's called The Room, and the other play for Jean Genet that's The Maids. Starting with Pinter, the themes of fragile identity, uncertain menace, and vulnerable space can be traced in Pinter's major plays. Though Pinter's plays are kind of dreamlike ones, he insists that his plays are realistic and that such things do happen in life. Edible mythical notions used by Pinter to assert the predicament of identity. His characters are edible sufferers. There is always an external forces threatening their fragile security, and they are in constant struggle to establish their identities, like Oedipus. All such images mixed between reality and illusion in plays that are more poetical than real. His plays can be seen as nightmares, or fantasies expressing the subconscious of the human mind and its psychology. The Oedipus figure appears clearly in Rose's Room, Stanley's Birthday, and Teddy's Homecoming. Stanley is one of the heroes of Pinter in his later plays called The Birthday Party, and Teddy also is the hero of his other play, The Homecoming. So, written over 3 days in 1957, The Room was Pinter's first work for the stage and might be considered as an embryonic treatment of some of the themes developed later in his plays. At first glance, it seems that the play presents a very straightforward existential allegory in which 60-year-old Rose Hudd, this is the heroine of the play, an occupant of a warm, homely room in a large house, feels menaced by the dark, icy outside world and is made insecure about her continued tenancy of her home. The other mythical character that appears in this play is the Riley, who is the blind Negro with an Irish name. Of course, Pinter sometimes dwelt heavily on political issues. Therefore, he introduced this early in his plays. Some of the critics believe that Pinter is absurd, like Martin Eslin, but most of the critics consider him as a political playwright, and that appears, I think, that appears early in his plays. So by using an Irish name, he alluded to the Irish dilemma or the Irish identity conflict. Among other things, Riley has been seen as an equivalent of the Greek fury sent to haunt Rose for the sins of her past, or as an angel of death come to carry her back to her father. As such, she appears to stand as a representative of all humanity, or maybe Rose may be seen as a Christ figure who sacrifices her life and her identity, maybe, to save all the humanity. With a quest similar to that of Oedipus, Rose is fearful of a world that fights the individual's need for stability and assured personal identity. Pinter's recurrent identification, on the other hand, of a mother and whore appears in more than one play. In The Room, Rose treats Bert, her husband, as both her husband and her son, while her strong reaction to Mr. Kidd is the landlord of the room where Rose is living. While her strong reaction to Mr. Kidd's request to see the blind Negro lying in the basement in the absence of her husband raises doubts of having a past with the prostitution. In various Greek mythologies, women are depicted as fertility figures. The idea of giving birth was divine, leading to the act of worshipping goddesses in ancient world. Prostitution, on the other hand, was far from being a clandestine act in ancient Greece and was considered as a legal economic source, not only for women, but for men as well. In the utopian world of Greeks, prostitutes had no place in the ideal city. Thus, by accepting the name Sal, Rose at the end of the play is called by Riley as Sal. So Rose cannot claim to belong where she is, and even her identity is laid bare. So the outcome of The Room reveals dual themes here. There is the theme dealing with the human condition, which is Rose's plight, and the restoration of the husband's rights in his own household, which is Bert's. And this is where I think that Pinter started with the myth of Oedipus to dwell on other modern issues, that is the male and female struggle to assert their identities. Rose's existential fear is increased when Mr. and Mrs. Sands knock her door to claim her secure warm room. Those are another characters introduced later in the play to claim the room of Rose. From their conversation, we notice that Mrs. Sands is also trying to mother her husband by forcing him to sit down in Rose's room. The Sands case, embedded in the middle of the play, reinforces the archetypal situation presented in the first scene between Rose and Bert. The whole situation is built around the male myth that it transforms an equalitarian husband-wife relationship into a mother-child one. In this myth, the woman is pictured as an unpleasant figure and with a negative traits that remind us of the terrible mother, while the male is helpless victim to be pitied and sympathized with. The discovery through anthropological studies of unilateral sexual myths created by men about women and not vice versa, can explain the frequent presence of archetypal patterns in Pinter's plays, in which the woman occupies a disadvantageous, defenseless position against a set male mythology and ideology. Rose spends all her energy in the defense of her vulnerable identity and femininity, but her initial human quest fades away by Bert's final appearance to transfer Rose from the father's domination to that of the husband's. Bert, at the end of the play, when he sees Riley asking Rose to come home to her father, he knocks him down and kills him, and afterwards, Rose clutches her eyes and becomes blind like Oedipus. So I believe that this situation or through the situation, Pintua really wanted to reflect the male-female struggle to assert their identities. And as The Room is his first play, he or Rose could not assert her identity. Therefore, she came back to the domination of her husband. But later on, in later Pintor plays, we see that the female figure grows up and starts to realize her aims. So, finally, the problem is of the existential of the existential quest is displaced by the specific problem of a woman at the mercy of male power. Coming to Jean Genet, theater is totally different issue. A world is turned upside down to exalt criminals and traitors, a dramaturgy so artful and convincing as to confuse the spectator and make him wonder which way is really up and whither. In the last analysis, it is he or the spectator who are the real playing. A religious style dedicated to the powers of darkness and evil, that is the forceful and unusual theater of Jean Genet. In Genet's world, theater is a totally different issue. His characters usually act out inverted myths. He acknowledged that the virtues inherent in the theater derive only from myth. Genet, more than any other writer, takes the idea that our identities exist as constructs of others and that we build myths around us, get into daily ceremonies to sustain each other's identities through the process. In his attempts to bring theater into theater, Genet believed that life itself is a series of games and role play, whereas individuals are trying to dominate each other. Based on this idea, the role play of the maids is based on this assumption. The Medusa mother appears when two maids, Claire and Solange, plan to kill the surrogate mother figure, Madame, to acquire their lost identities within her entity. For Genet, the function of theater is not to show the world as it is, but to rather exaggerate and distort the desired images of ourselves and the forces that shape those imaginary selves. Therefore, he tends to create myths carried out by ceremonies that are closer to clown show than to real ones. And hence, the figure of Madame is enacted like an evil myth and exalted like a goddess, oppressing the outcasts to whom Genet himself belongs and identifies with. The role play through which Claire becomes Madame while Solange impersonates her sister Claire is a kind of a rebellious act where the contents of a dream spill over the miserable reality of both sisters who are trying desperately to attain their lost, void selves, which can't be realized without the presence of their mother oppressor, Madame. So the play is about two maids who are playing a game. One of them is acting like Madame and the other like a servant, trying to attain their identity through the figure of Madame. So Madame, again, the image of her mother appears in Genet as Madame is depicted as a whore whose main concern in life is to make herself attractive to her lovers. The story of the maids parallels the Greek story of Electra, which can be considered an equivalent myth for females to the Oedipus story. In this story told by Sophocles and Euripides, Electra is the young daughter of Clytemnestra, who plans the murder of her mother by her brother Orestes to avenge her father's death by her mother's lover. In his essay, A Case of Homosexuality in a Woman, Freud both makes the connection and rejects the Electra story as unequivalent to Oedipus. He quotes, I don't see any advance or gain in the introduction of the term Electra complex and don't advocate its use. End of the quote. All in all, Freud suggests that women do not have the same desire to kill their mothers as men do towards their fathers. And maybe this is why Electra does not kill her mother herself, but lets her brother Orestes commit the murder. This could also be the reason why Claire couldn't really kill Madame and carried out the whole wish herself, as a substitute for her impulse to do so, because Claire, at the end of the play, does not kill Madame Noël, but she prefers to drink the poisoned tea she earlier made for Madame to drink, and she drank the tea herself and died instead of Madame. Though Madame does not have a name, as she is an icon created by Genet to be even more false and less royal than her servants, yet her individuality is guaranteed by the social hierarchy to which she belongs. Thus, Genet plays the game to the full. The maids who were hesitant to go through their scheme are not anymore. Therefore, the exchange identities was mere act to take them to their final destination in the rite of passage from servitude to individuality. The play ends by symbolic murder of Madame in the figure of Claire, whose main concern, together with her sister, is not to kill Madame herself as much as the concept of Madame-ness. The myth that has always haunted them, both in their wretched reality and fancy dreams, and turned them into void, depersonalized characters with phantoms shaped according to the other, has finally been materialized. In conclusion, I would rather ask the question that may impose itself now. Do we need myth any longer in contemporary theater? And if so, why do we need it? In what form and for what benefit? Many people in the present time may consider myths as untrue or mere nonsense, but others still believe in the importance of myth, that it has become part of their collective thinking, to the extent that some myths are considered as complete fact. The playwrights at hand became aware of this fact early in the last century and relied on the mythic thinking of people at the time to dwell on some of the iconic issues of their societies. No doubt, theater was the best mirror for their thoughts, not to annihilate myth in social life, but to admit that it is an integral part of society's culture, and it is necessary not to ignore it, but to deal with it face to face. This is not to claim that myth is super fact, but to admit that it expresses some underlying truths that has value as a source of knowledge and as a vehicle for exploring ideas and invisible realms. What is at stake here is not the chastity of the characters, whether they are whores or criminals, but rather their constant attempts to construct their identities through their endeavors to dominate each other and possess one another, to perceive themselves in the other, in Sartre's words. In a world that is pretty violent one, as Pinter commented, his portrayal of the human behavior has affected how we view the behavior of our fellow humans and their attempts to assert their individuality or individual autonomy, or jockeying for dominance, while the purpose of Genet's dramatic writing is not only to celebrate the lives of the outcasts, but to show the interdependence of the powerful and the dispossessed in any human society, and to confront the right-thinking bourgeois with the reality of this interdependence, and hence with their own complicity in the state of those they condemn. Such dilemmas, whether in historical or imaginary frame, could be conveyed in a powerful way in archetypal mythical enactments on a stage that acted as the right medium of the playwrights preaching the 20th century dilemma, that is the predicament of identity. Thank you.